What defines Ohio? A place that dares to go first and never looks back. There's no slowing us down. In Ohio, we're powering America, discovering breakthroughs, driving the future, propelling tomorrow. At Jobs Ohio, our mission is clear. Strengthen job opportunities and empower Ohio's workforce. Ohio, our time is now. See Ohio's momentum at jobsohio.com/ohio's time.
And welcome into the Thursday edition of Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Robbie Stanley, Joe Rex Road, Michelle Knezovic here with you on this Thursday morning in Nashville, Tennessee. Joe, what's going on? How are we doing? How's life?
Yeah, we're doing all right, but you didn't tell me that today was We're Vibing Robbie t-shirt day. I mean, I could have worn mine too.
I told you, there's going to have to be a day where this just happens naturally.
I mean, yesterday we basically did.
If you would have worn this t-shirt today, that'd been 2 days in a row. That would have been started to be a little concerned.
That would have been special. I should wear that out to Titans camp.
You should.
See what they think. Actually, I haven't seen mine in a while. Now that I think about it.
May have been commandeered by somebody.
Future rant. Dad's clothes disappearing. A totally different rant. So keep that in mind for the future.
Keep that in mind for maybe Monday. We'll see what happens on that front with the Rex rant. Coming up at 7:45. Michelle, how are we doing today? What's going on?
Good morning, guys. Good morning. NBA drafts tonight. I got my Shaq shirt on.
She does.
We both have cool shirts on.
That's
Joe,
right.
You missed the memo.
All right, what is it? Shaq? Shaquille O'Neal shirt? Oh, okay, nice.
Cover the Slam Magazine.
That's Slam Magazine cover from long ago. Yeah, there we go. So you're a Shaq fan?
Oh, yeah. You can't not love the Inside the NBA, Shaq and Ernie Charles.
It's the best show on television ever.
It's pretty awesome.
That's actually, we were talking the other day, we're talking about The Office and Seinfeld. I mean, I think I could make a case that should be in the top five comedy shows ever.
I think you could, right? Too. Yes.
Amazing.
Just letting Shaq and Barkley go back and forth at each other. Or is the Detroit Pistons staying at number one tonight in the draft? They moving down.
I mean, if they move
down.
They're
getting some offers.
Well, if they move down, it's like that organization has just been soiled by being around other Detroit sports franchises. I mean, it just, don't overthink it. Take Cade Cunningham.
And move on.
And prosper. He's the clear one. It's going to be exciting.
It's going to be exciting. We'll see what happens on the NBA draft coverage tonight. I believe you can hear that on ESPN 102.5 The Game starting at 6 o'clock. So looking forward to that.
Two Vols going to go at some point. That's going to be interesting too.
Yeah.
I like Jaden Springer a lot. He's a good player. I think he's got a chance to be a good player in the league. I think Keon Johnson's ceiling to me is much higher. Doesn't mean he'll reach it. But it's 48-inch vertical. I know that's not everything. But we saw what he did last year. He's going to immediately – said this about Saben Lee. You know, I didn't know if Saben Lee was going to stick in the league, but he has. He's done great. But I said right away, athletically, he's a plus player in the NBA right now.
Sure.
And Keon Johnson's a step beyond that. So if he can tighten up that handle.
Tighten up.
Yeah, that's right. Pun not intended, but what the heck. I think Keon Johnson could be a special player. At the very least, he's going to be an energy guy off the bench, defender off the bench. You know, someone's going to be happy to get him. I think the Warriors should think about it, but we'll see. Well, there's some trades that we know are going to happen today, too. What is Golden State going to do to try to make this next push?
Pray that Klay Thompson stays healthy. Probably step number one.
Well, that's got to be. That has to be part of the equation. Yeah, for sure. There's some Bradley Beal talk. Yeah. You know, there's different. There's some Ben Simmons talk. They got 7-14 in the draft. That's going to be interesting. It's so weird to have like the NBA draft and the Olympics going on at the same time.
Yes.
For example,
and NFL
and
training camp, all going on at the same time, and NHL free agency as well.
And that. And
what a day that was yesterday in the NHL. Lots of money handed out. Trades continuing to be facilitated as well. And, Joe, we talked about it on the show yesterday. Mikhail Granlund, what was his future going to look like? And in the middle of the show, Pierre LeBrun tweets out that Granlund is heading to free agency. He'll be testing the market, and Todd Diamond, Granlund's agent, told Adam Vingan that talks with the Predators essentially led nowhere. So we were thinking, all right, well, I guess the Predators are about to move on to life without Mikael Granlund. And 2 hours later, Mikael Granlund has signed a 4-year, $20 million contract with the Nashville Predators. That was quite the swing from, hey, they're moving to free agency and talks led nowhere, to a couple hours later, a 4-year deal that Mikael Granlund agrees to with the Nashville Predators. It continues to be a really strange dynamic between he and this organization when it comes to contracts and what the future looks like. I thought for sure he was gone, and all of a sudden he's back for the next 4 years.
I don't understand what happened. So I'm at Titans camp. At this point, moved on to watching Titans camp, having just dismissed the idea that Granlund will be back. And, you know, you sort of like Porth tweeted yesterday, as soon as, you know, there was word that basically didn't look good, you know, well, okay, youth movement, Cody Glass going to get more opportunity. You know, it's a full-on, you're shading toward rebuild on the competitive rebuild. You're shading toward the rebuild part of the competitive rebuild. I'm sitting there at camp talking to Kayla Anderson and Ashley Farrell about Ashley's dog, and all of a sudden I just look at Twitter. I'm like, I burst out. I'm like, what? What is going on here? I actually was too busy yesterday to call Vingan. Does that, like, what's up with that agent?
Well, the agent, you know, Vingan reached back out to him, and you can check this out at theathletic.com. And, you know, the agent literally told Vingan there was no traction at any point in terms of these contract negotiations. 2 hours later, Granlund's got a contract signed, and the agent said, quote, "What happened is the organization had a change of heart and realized that Mikael is too valuable in many different aspects and decided to step up and meet us much closer to where we projected his value." So according to the agent, and again, you always kind of got to be careful with what the agents are saying, because their stories are very one-sided in this conversation. But according to the agent, he was gone, and then I guess the Predators said, oh, wait, I guess we don't really want to lose Mikael Granlund, and stepped up and offered 4 years, $20 million.
Or were they just posturing?
Could be.
So what you're telling me is that Vingan has addressed this and has written this at the website I work for, and I had no idea.
That is correct.
Okay, good. Good to know. I'll check that out.
You can check that out at theathletic.com.
Wow. So, yeah, that's interesting.
Yeah. And I guess the Predators were hoping that maybe he gets to the market and, similar to last year, doesn't find what he's looking for and then comes back and meets them maybe a little bit closer to what their deal is going to be. But according to Granlund's agent, there were 7 to 8 other offers out there for Granlund. Now, I don't know if I believe that, but that's what he says. I got to tell you, though, Joe, like, I don't like this contract. I really don't. And I said it yesterday here on the show. I'm not really willing to go beyond 2 years with Granlund at this point. And I hate the term of this contract. I really do. It's 4 years. Look, I like Mikael Granlund. We've talked about that. Obviously, we know how important he was to this team. And look, I think he will be again next year. I think it's obvious John Hines loves him. I'm not saying anything about the player itself. But, like, at some point, to me, you got to get out of the business of compromising on term. And he'll be 33 at the end of this contract, getting paid $5 million a year. And I had somebody tell me yesterday, well, that's a tradable contract at the end of it. Maybe. Like, we have no clue. I mean, $5 million, it's not $8 million, but it's not cheap in terms of what that contract looks like. So, look, I'm not saying that it's not going to work out and that Granlund can't get through the end of it and still be a good player. My initial thoughts to it yesterday was, I really don't like that fourth year. Really. I could probably live with 3, wouldn't like it. I really don't like that fourth year of this deal.
Yeah. I mean, I guess I look at it like in the context of other deals on the team. You know, I agree. Like three for 15, great. That's probably perfect. There's an extra year tacked on. Even if it's not tradable, there's a buyout that wouldn't be all that painful, you know? they are better because of him. I like their chances of making the playoffs more because of this. He's obviously so important to John Hines and what he likes to do. And to me, this was a necessary step to, you know, after not trading him at the deadline to get him. So I don't disagree with you. Like, 1 year less would be better. But when you talk about, again, some of the terms of deals that Poile has handed out in recent years, it's better. It's improving.
Well, it's not eight.
So it's not good. Eight. Not seven, eight, nine. It's better. I mean, look, this shades them back toward the competitive side of competitive rebuild to me.
I mean, what does that mean? Like, what is competitive?
Well, it means can you make the playoffs?
They are right on the fringe of a playoff team. That's what they are.
Right. I mean, no, I understand. Like, they're in this middle ground. But it's just like, you know, do you decide? I think had they not been able to make this happen, I think there would be an embrace of, okay, young. And maybe it'll work still. Maybe you'll still make the playoffs. But very young in a lot of key spots. And in some ways, maybe for fans, that would be more exciting to watch. But, I mean, Cody Glass is still going to be part of this team next year and get opportunities to do things. And, yeah, it's this middle ground. But it's obviously important to them to make the playoffs. And I think they have a better chance next year for whatever that is worth.
Eric Hall are going to the Bruins, it looks like. So they're not bringing both back. Like, to me, the more I thought about it yesterday, like, you can't bring both those guys back. I mean, there are too many young guys that need to play in order to bring both those guys back. And, you know, I heard, you know, Gover and Porth talking about this last night on Preds Insiders. I will say, with bringing Granlund back, again, I understand why they did it. I think he's very important. It is difficult, really, to figure out what the plan is right now, because you've basically just jettisoned some of your older guys this year, and you've gotten younger. And David Poile, again yesterday, talked about getting younger with this team. And then you've got Granlund, who I guess is going to be their second-line center. Johansson's going to be their first-line center. So what does this mean for Cody Glass? Like, is he just going to sit there on the third line the whole year? What does it mean for Philip Tomasino? Is he going to sit there on the third line the whole year? Like, it's difficult, and you know, this can change with one injury and one guy playing well, one guy not playing well. I realize that. It is difficult to kind of identify what the plan is, because it feels like they're done. Like, there could be trades out there, but it kind of feels like this is it, and this is what they're going to be rolling with. And again, I think this is a worse team than it was a year ago. It kind of, I'm looking at this saying, all right, now what is the plan moving forward here? And I'm having a tough time coming up with it.
Yeah, I would say my guess is try to make the playoffs next year, because you think that's important. And if you're going to say competitive rebuild, competitive means you sneak in the playoffs anyway while you're figuring things out. That, then, you are seeing more young players. You're gonna probably give Tomasino a good look. Cody Glass is now in. You're hoping Tolvanen has a full season of what he was early last season. And then you see where you are, and you have the financial flexibility to try to do something big a year from now. I mean, that's my guess. I have no idea if it will all work, but now, will something big a year from now push you back up to where you want to be, or even close to it? I don't know. I think that has as much to do with those young guys I just mentioned as anything. And Saros.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, there's a lot of factors. It could all break their way.
It could.
It could.
It might work out.
It
might. We'll continue this discussion when we come back. Are this version of the Nashville Predators, is it a playoff team? What do we think about the prospects for this team as they move forward here? And we'll also get to another move made yesterday by the Predators as well. All that coming up next. This is Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Welcome back in, Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Robbie Stanley, Joe Rex Road, Michelle Konezvic here with you on this Thursday morning in Nashville, Tennessee. Talking Nashville Predators, Mikael Granlund back in the fold with the Predators. 4 years, $20 million signed to that contract yesterday on the first day of free agency. Also, another move made yesterday by the Predators as well. Goaltender David Riddick signed to a one-year, $1.25 million contract by the Predators. Riddick, most recently of the Calgary Flames, and a brief stint last year with Toronto as well. David Riddick, you know, at one point, was a starter for the Calgary Flames. That did not transition well into last year. Not a very good year last year for David Rittich, but only 28 years old, does have some starting experience in the NHL, and that is the way the Predators have decided to address the backup goaltender position. Very cheap, one-year deal, and that tells me a couple of things, Joe, and you brought this up during the break. I think they're kind of in wait-and-see mode with Connor Ingram, and maybe if Ingram has a very good year next year, that he could come in and be the guy behind Saros in the year following that. So not a multi-year deal for David Rittich at this point. We'll see what happens on that front. But it also told me, Joe, and I think we knew this anyway, but this just kind of doubled down on it. UC Saros is going to play a lot of games next year. And I said 60, 65. I think he's going to be somewhere right in that sweet spot. I would expect UC Saros to see a lot of action in net next year for the Nashville Predators.
Yeah, no doubt. And, you know, if there is some kind of injury, I mean, that was the case, I think, you know, to get a little bit more established goaltender for maybe a little bit higher price.
Yeah. That didn't work out for David Rittich. $1.25 million. So, I mean, it is cheap, and now I'm interested to see, like, what exactly is the contract going to look like for Saros, because there's another interesting deal yesterday that I think took a lot of people by surprise, and that is Philip Grubauer, who is a Vezina Trophy finalist, which we spent a lot of time talking about here on the show, a six-year, $35.5 million contract with the Seattle Kraken, which works out to roughly 5.9-ish, somewhere in that area, $1 million per year. In the annual average value, like, that's an interesting contract. I mean, I would probably take UC Saros over Philip Grubauer. So is Saros going to be operating around that number? Is he going to be closer to $6 million per year? What's that going to look like for Saros? David Poile did confirm yesterday that negotiations with Saros have now begun, and they've just basically just started. So I don't know what the timeline on that is going to look like, but it is interesting. One Vezina Trophy finalist signs with a different team. The Vezina Trophy winner is traded. And now you got to figure out how exactly to land that contract if you're David Poile and what that sweet spot looks like for UC Saros.
Yeah. How about the Kraken?
Sweeping in there.
Kind of. That's maybe the first thing I look at and say, huh, I don't know, Kraken. But I don't know. This is also a situation where, although it was unfair to UC Saros, and although Predators fans did not like it at all, that he got basically hosed in the Vezina voting, probably helps David Poile. Those things. Those things come up in negotiations. So, I would say with him too, and of course this is also related to what may be coming a few years down the line. This is one of those, maybe a little bit higher number for shorter term would make sense for the Preds.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think if you're the Predators, you probably don't want to get yourself locked into a 4 or 5 year deal with him, because to your point, with Askarov, what happens if he's ready in 3 years? Like, then you've got a decision to make. He's going to be your backup goaltender at that point? Like, what's going to happen? I think 2-3 years would be pretty good deal for the Predators.
Well, honestly,
question is, does Saros want that?
Well, it might be a better deal for him too.
Yeah,
because it's kind of betting on yourself that, you know, if you have a 3-year deal and you play at this level, you're going to be underpaid by the end of it. But maybe by then the cap looks a little bit better, and if Askarov is what the Preds hope he is by then, well, then you will be very attractive on the open market.
Yeah, absolutely.
So, I think there's a good case to be made for about a 3-year deal on both sides of this. It's just, what's the number?
So let's go to our text line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, 615-737-1025, 615-737-1025. Jordan texting in, Ellis has gotten abused since his injury and RV became expendable. We became bigger on D, and Rocco outperformed Arvidsson in the past, especially in the playoffs, and both weren't used by Hines. I don't see how we're worse. Going to miss Yarncroke, though. This team is worse. Yeah. I don't know how you could look at what's happened this offseason and not realize that this team has gotten worse. I get it. There's reasons for excitement, and you can be excited about young players. How often do you see a team go get younger and they just get better? Very rarely does that happen.
Yeah, I mean, Yarncroke is a good one to bring up there.
Yeah.
very important guy, plug in everywhere.
And again, this idea that Ryan Ellis has been just like this waste of space out there since he got injured. I mean, honestly, I'm getting to the point where if you believe that, stop. Like, you're not watching hockey. Like, I don't understand what you're watching. Yes, he's gotten pushed around in the playoffs. If you think that Ryan Ellis has just been like this constant negative out there, you don't know what you're talking about. It's as simple as that.
I'm sorry, it's true. It's shift after shift, year after year, and especially, again, since he got healthier and more recently, I think he's played really well. Yeah, he's had some bad moments. And he's been victimized, and his size sometimes hurts him. But, again, there's a reason the Flyers were motivated to get him. A lot of teams would love to have Ryan Ellis in their top pairing. I mean, that's just reality. So, yeah, that's one of those. Are you a Preds Facebook fan or what? Preds Facebook, what do they think about Ryan Ellis?
Not a big fan. Well, look, I get it. I'm not saying Ryan Ellis is perfect. And I'm not saying that this team can't make the playoffs, but I'll say this. Like, if you asked me to predict right now if the Predators were going to make the playoffs or not, my answer would be no, and pretty strongly no. Like, I don't think they're a playoff team, even with Granlund coming back, especially with some of the moves that other teams in the division have made. I don't think this team is a playoff team. Now, I think they're close. I think they're right there on the fringe where the conversation starts to become, all right, you're a bubble team. It's very similar to what it was a year ago, but – if you think that they've gone through this offseason and now that they're just all of a sudden better, they're not better than they were a year ago. Now, to your point, if things break their way and Cody Glass figures it out here, Philip Tomasino comes in and immediately makes an impact, Ellie Tolvanen takes that next step. I mean, I can keep going down the list. Alex Carrier proves that, you know, 20 games last year weren't a fluke. Saros plays at the same level he did to close out last year. But you get what I'm getting at here. That's a lot of things breaking your way at that point. How often does that happen in the NHL? Not very often. Now, the path is there. I'm not saying there's no path to the playoffs for this team, because there is. I think there is a path to the playoffs for this team. But this idea that they're just like unequivocally better right now, I don't understand that. I don't know what you're watching this offseason.
They're not better. I it's not reasonable to just look at them and say they're better. They are younger, and so there are some interesting and there are some guys who are going to play next year who at some point could make them better.
Sure.
But again, like, I mean, Ellis, that's a huge piece. I mean, you have to understand that. It's a huge piece. He's been a terrific player. And so now you still have, of course, Josi, but, you know, is Carrier going to be Carrier from last year? Is Fabro going to figure everything out, put it all together? No, they're not better at all. I would guess, though, right now, force me to guess, I would guess they sneak in. So much of it depends on, I mean, because signing Granlund definitely improves that outlook a lot for me. I think you have a chance to try this Johansson-Forsberg-Duchesne line and see if you can have something there. You know, Johansson and Duchesne remain huge parts of the answer of whether they are or not. Huge. But I would guess that with Saros, the way he's played, and he sustained it long enough for me to think he can keep doing it, maybe not quite at that level, but at a high level, and just the way they played collectively, I do buy into the texture there on the bigger, tougher, stronger. That's obviously a big, you know, push here, and I think that, you know, that's good. I mean, I think that there's something to that, and they found some things in that last 28 games of the regular season that they should be able to carry over to some extent.
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting because you talk about getting bigger and tougher and stronger. I mean, I agree to a point, but like, let's think about the guys that are going to be playing. Dante Fabro is not big. Alex Carrier is not big. Philip Myers is big, but you're talking about a third pairing guy at that point. I mean, let's think about their top line. Granlund's not big. Forsberg's big, but it's not like they've got like these giants out there that they're playing with.
They just got rid of their really little guys.
I mean, relatively speaking, they're still about average. So it's not like they're this there's just this huge team running around out there either.
Right, but they're bigger.
They're bigger. You know,
they got guys. When you
I don't know that they're bigger enough to where it's going to make that much of a difference.
You put an average human in for Arvidsson and Ellis, and I guess if Rocco's not in the lineup, which I don't, that's going to be interesting.
Yeah.
But, you know, I mean, the herd line is also big, powerful, strong. I mean, they're good. They made a difference.
They did. Again, fourth line. How much are you going to rely on
that? Identity line, Robbie. Yeah, identity line.
Again, if that's your formula moving forward to what's going to make you successful, I got news for you. It ain't going to work.
You gotta have some guys scoring the puck.
That's a pretty important thing in today's NHL, putting the puck in the back of the net. So we'll continue to keep you updated on NHL free agency and any other moves the Predators could make as we go throughout the days and weeks ahead here on Robbie and Rexrode. When we come back, day one yesterday of Titans training camp, Joe Rexrode was there. We'll get his observations from day one on the field. That coming up next. This is Robbie and Rexrode here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Welcome back in, Robbie and Rexrode here on ESPN 102.5 The Game, streaming live on Periscope, on YouTube, and on Twitch as well. Robbie Stanley, Joe Rexrode, Michelle Knezovic here with you on this Thursday morning in Nashville, Tennessee. And Joe Rexrode, you were out yesterday at St. Thomas Sports Park for day one on the field of the 2021 version of Tennessee Titans training camp. I'm sure it was a lot of fun. Many more training camp practices to come for you in the next few weeks here leading up to the NFL season. Coming up here in just a few weeks at Nissan Stadium when the Cardinals come to town. What were your observations from day one of Titans training camp on the field yesterday?
Well, there were quite a few. We'll get into the player who is destined for massive hype in the next segment. So I'll save that. First of all, you didn't see a ton of some of the key guys on this team. So Taylor Lewan missed a little bit, kind of went inside, which I believe was planned. Derrick Henry didn't really do team stuff. Julio Jones did very little. So I don't know if that's always going to be the case. But I guess if you're Mike Vrabel, it's like, man, What if like Derrick Henry gets hurt in a shorts and helmets day in, like, you know, 7-on-7
in July?
I will say, yeah, exactly. It's an interesting, if you're a coach in this situation, it's really interesting because it really did used to be. So I'm working on this story on Bruce Matthews right now because he's in our NFL top 100 players, and I mean, like, you know, talking about with him and some other people who knew him from back then, like. I mean, they did legit two-a-days, full pads, like, the whole time, and everyone, you know, just smashing into each other.
Yeah.
And now it's – I do feel like it totally makes sense, obviously, to take away a lot of the contact, right? But almost feel like there's more concern now that you get hurt because you never do that stuff. Regardless, I mean, that's the way to go, and that's the way – and Vrabel has been very – cautious all along in his career. So I don't know how much we're going to see about those guys. I will say in some of the little drills, Derrick Henry had a sweet TD catch where, like, really sharp route, looks smooth catching the ball.
This is going to be the year?
Well, I mean, hey, there. Let me tell you something. There is no doubt. The work he puts in tells me he's saying, at some point, you guys are going to play me every freaking down. You know, and they're still like, well, no. But, I mean, he has really improved. Like, I watched him call in a TD pass yesterday, and I was like three years ago? No way. You know, he's really worked hard on that. I don't know. You know, like, I don't know how much that's going to be utilized. I mean, Darrington Evans also, I thought, looked good yesterday, if you want an observation. Amani Hooker looked really good yesterday. And not just on he jumped a route and picked off Tannehill in 7-on-7. And Tannehill, by the way, of course, just like tried to track him down. I was like, is Tannehill going to tackle him right now? It's 7-on-7, first day of camp. But Hooker.
Don't do it.
Hooker looked good. Byard looked good yesterday. You know, it's, again, we're not talking about pads right now. We're talking about shorts and helmets and first day and things like that. But those are some of the people who stood out to me. I will say this, too, in vague terms, because it's the only way it can be said, but I will say it, and I might get in trouble for this, but I'll say it anyway. I mean, it's only 6:37, right? Who's awake? After yesterday, I feel better about Caleb Farley than I did before yesterday. So
that's good.
Take that for what it's worth, but I will see. We'll see in terms of how quickly they're willing to get him going in any kind of contact or anything like that. But I think anybody who was there yesterday would say the same thing. And I was talking with quite a few people on sidelines, and we were all sort of saying, wow. So yeah, we'll see. We'll see on that front. I'm sure it's going to be very slow and very gradual. It's an interesting case. I mean, Christian Fulton and Janoris Jenkins – those are your outside corners.
Sure.
Right now. And you could be good there. You could be fine with them as your outside corners. Elijah Molden, one of the guys who is available to us. I just think Elijah Molden is made to be a slot cornerback in the NFL. And we'll see how good he is as a rookie. But there's nothing that I've seen or heard that makes me think that the Titans won't be glad they made him a third-round pick.
Well, that's what everybody's been saying. TD's been really high on Elijah Molden really ever since he's been drafted. I will say, saw some videos coming out of training camp yesterday as we were wrapping up the show. A.J. Brown still looks pretty good.
Oh, yeah, that's right. There's him, too. Well, that was another interesting thing because, like I just said, Lawan, Julio's, Jones is standing there watching a lot of it. Derrick Henry's in the sand pit. A.J. Brown's taking every rep, man. He's wearing out every cornerback who wants to get in front of him. So, no, he looked really good. And, again, contrast this with a year ago. And it's one of those things where it's like the thing with Lawan. I'm pretty sure that Lawan was a plant thing because he came back out and all that stuff. I mean, but, like, A.J. Brown last year during camp, a lot was leaving, coming back. And it was clear there was something going on.
Yep.
You know, of course, we never got what it was. We saw how great he was last year, but also banged up. And at times, like...
Finally saw it on Instagram Live.
Right. And then yeah, luckily, he took us right into the surgery room. So, but then you think about yesterday, nothing on any knee, nothing on any ankle, just out there just wearing people out. So, yeah, I mean, look, they are going to be potent. I thought Reynolds looked good yesterday. We got the detail on the off-season winners, which Mike Vrabel, that's become a thing where he tells us.
I didn't see this. Who won the off-season?
Well, let's see if you can guess then.
Well.
So the off-season, this is, for people who don't know, this is basically the guys who just did the best.
Right.
Did the best work in the offseason, came back, offseason award winner, just came back in the best shape or whatever other things you can do independently.
All right, is it too obvious to guess Derrick Henry just based on the amount of work that he puts in? Because I feel like he should probably win it every year, but you can't give it to him every year.
You can't. And by the way, so Mike Herndon from Broadway Sports has compiled all the winners. So I'm looking. Derrick Henry did win it in Vrabel's first year.
Yeah.
He's one of the winners in his first year.
Right.
Along with Ben Jones, Kevin Byard, Corey Davis.
I'm going to guess that Christian Fulton is in there. And the only reason I'm guessing that, number one, I've not seen it, but number two, just because Vrabel, like when Vrabel goes out of his way to start talking about people, like I start paying attention to that because he doesn't do that very often. But he did that the other day in his opening press conference. So without knowing anything, I'm guessing Christian Fulton. But by the look on your face, that appears to be wrong.
That is wrong.
Okay.
So... Any other guesses?
No.
Okay. So this goes into another observation, by the way. T.R. Tartt is one of them. T.R. Tartt looked in shape, looked active, looked fast. Again, a lot of yesterday.
Is he coming off the edge now?
A lot of seven. He's not coming off the edge. But a lot of seven on seven, you know, obviously. So a lot of pass rush, a lot of pass protection, of course.
Sure.
And I thought, by the way, Laurell Murchison looked good yesterday. Really fast, really quick in some plays. He's also one of the winners. So going into camp, one thing we talked about was D-line depth. How are they there? Well, there's two guys who appear to have looked at this and said, gosh, I got a real opportunity here. one, you know, you want to be in the NFL.
Sure.
You want to stay in the NFL. But two, I'm going to be able to get snaps for this team. And it appears both of them have taken it to heart, had great summers. And that's really good news for the Titans. You don't know who's going to get hurt. You're hoping that Autry and Simmons are on that field a lot, but you've got to be able to rotate people in. And again, you may have someone hurt. So those are two of the winners. Anthony Firkser is one of the winners. And I thought, by the way, Firkser, it's interesting. He just looks different out there. He's TE1. I mean, he's out there when ones versus ones, and it's he has a certain elevation of, I don't know, aura about him.
Yeah. So what you're telling me is, of the three people that Vrabel named the other day, there's one that I guessed did not win.
Oh, he mentioned, yeah. Well, and there's one more winner of this. Nick Westbrook Akeem.
Oh, thank you very much. Oh, boy.
But I tell you what, I know we have to go to break. That is another observation, and it leads into the next segment of the player who shall be hyped. But receiver, man, it is going to be a battle.
And to that point.
It is going to be a battle.
And to that point, there is one player in particular that caught a lot of eyes yesterday on the first day of Titans training camp. We'll get to that coming up next. This is Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Tune in to Nashville Sounds Baseball on ESPN 94.9. Tonight, the Sounds are at home against Columbus, the AAA affiliate of the Cleveland Indians. Pregame show with Jeff Hem starts at 6:50 and first pitch is at 7:05. Nashville Sounds Baseball on ESPN 94.9, presented by 312 Pizza Company and Farm Bureau Health Plans. Welcome back in, Robbie and Rex Road, here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. We'll have David Beauclair from SI.com joining us to begin the 7 o'clock hour. So looking forward to David's thoughts on the Titans and the Nashville Predators as well. All that coming up at 7 o'clock to begin that hour. Right now, discussing day one of Titans training camp yesterday. Joe Rexroad was there. He was on the field. And Joe, there was a lot of chatter yesterday about one guy in particular at day one of Titans training camp. And it was a rookie that maybe most people wouldn't expect to be talking about. But pretty big day yesterday for Racing McMath.
Well, to be clear, by the way, I was on the sideline, not on the field. Although I think I could
have. Well, you can get some snaps in there.
I could have maybe, in the punt drill. Or, fake rush. The kickers, by the way, before we get into Racing McMath, both kickers were 5 for 5. Tucker McCann was good. His stuff was,
strong.
Was strong. Blake Hallbill, a little bit shakier. He had a doink that went his way among the five he made. So I would say clearly McCann better on day one. But, yes, Racing McMath, we've talked about him. We talked about him in the spring. Just about every time I went out there in the spring, I was like, man, that guy, how could you be that big and that fast? And how could you have as little as production as he had? But we know a lot of the answer to that. And, yeah, he looks really good. He had a really nice corner route, post corner for a TD, and I think it was Woodside who threw it. But it was pretty. And in every situation, he kind of stands out. Again, he's going to stand out. He's wearing Jonnu Smith's 81, and it's just almost like Jonnu Smith, got thinner, but still, like, he's sort of in between a receiver and tight end size. But he does not run like someone in between a receiver and a tight end. He runs like a receiver. So he's going to be really interesting. And it's funny, we had Vrabel on yesterday. For his what? He's going to come on twice a week now, I think, probably. But we had Vrabel on yesterday. And
probably not.
Yeah, and we talked about how Vrabel doesn't like to talk about individuals too much.
Yeah.
Now, I will say, I probably overstated that some. Like, during camp, you can ask him about this guy or that guy, how are they doing, or what is it about their game or whatever, and he'll give you an answer, but here's his answer when he's asked about Racing McMath. Quote, he's fun to coach, man. He just keeps getting better. He has a unique skill set. He's big. He's fast. He's coachable. And then he talks about how he takes a rep and he's an open field tackling drill as a receiver. Then he does it on defense because, he's if he's making this team, he is making this team because of special team. But again, special teams. But again, he's been fun to coach. Unique skill set. These are words from Mike Vrabel, a guy who usually is at least very measured in praising people, talking people up. So that sort of reinforces the notion you have watching from the sideline. Man, this guy is making people notice.
Well, and I heard Jared and Caroline talking about this yesterday too, and I think it's interesting to think about. It's always fascinating too to just think about how much of a difference Julio Jones makes in all this as well. But all of a sudden, the Titans have gone from losing Adam Humphries, losing Corey Davis, and us spending, you know, all offseason long talking about wide receiver and how there's not a whole lot of depth there, to all of a sudden it looks like there could be some really good depth at that position with, obviously, you know, the top three, AJ, Julio Jones, and Josh Reynolds, who by all accounts looked pretty good yesterday as well. Des Fitzpatrick, he's going to be in that mix as well. And then you start talking about guys like Batson and McMath and Westbrook Akina and Chester Rogers. And you can go down the list. Marcus Johnson there as well. I mean, nobody's going to get excited about the bottom part of your wide receiver room, and I understand that. But like McMath, if he finds a way on this team, and again, special teams is going to have to be a big part of that, from a size, from a skill set perspective, this could be a pretty deep wide receiver room, regardless of who ends up making the team. And look, there are going to be one or two guys that don't make this team that probably are legitimate NFL players. And that's a pretty good problem to have at wide receiver if you're John Robinson and the Titans.
Yeah, and I'm glad you mentioned Rodgers and Johnson, because they both are making plays. They look good. It is pretty amazing that it looks like this huge strength and area of depth now. And, yeah, Julio coming in and just sort of shifting the entire room is a big part of that. But Fitzpatrick looks good right now in the early going. And, again, McMath, I mean, you sort of take a flyer on someone, and at the time, I don't know that I necessarily thought much of it. A lot of guys in the sixth round often don't make teams, but this looks like a shrewd choice, and it's going to be interesting, because I'll tell you what, Cam Batson, it didn't look to me like he sat around all summer. I mean, he's working hard to make this team, and he made a lot of plays yesterday. And some of this is, to me, does it matter? Is it important for the Titans? Of course, they're going to just base it on performance, but is it important for them to have someone like Batson in the room? Now, I'm not talking about personality. That'd be an absolute yes. But is it important to have like a smaller, shiftier, more of like a true slot, quote unquote?
Or are you just going to have a bunch of trees out there at 6'3", 6'4", 6'5"?
Yeah,
running around, which looks like could be their formula.
Yeah, it's almost like, I mean, they're like the Preds. Like the Titans receivers are like the Preds, you know. Get rid of all the small guys and go big. But Batson is going to make a bid. I mean, I put my initial 53 six receivers, and Batson was excluded. And I immediately was like, ugh, I don't like that pick. But could they actually keep seven receivers? I mean, if Westbrook, Akina, and McMath are going to be as critical in the kicking game as I think they are, I think they're both going to make the team. And then someone either has to lose out or some other position group has to lose out, and this is just, you know, receiver central. And again, I'm discounting Rodgers. I'm discounting Johnson, and they are making bids too. So it's going to be a ton of fun to watch that group in the next few weeks.
Let's go to our text line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, 615-737-1025. Logan texting in. Possible tight end transition for Racing McMath. Do you think that could be on the table, that Racing McMath makes the transition to tight end? This is coming from Logan in Clarksville.
Maybe someday. I mean, right now, I would say, right now, I mean, he's coming in as a receiver who didn't get a ton of, you know, game reps in college, trying to learn that position, playing receiver, trying to learn how to play in the kicking game at the NFL level, make a team. So you're not going to be like, hey, Let's talk about one of the most complicated positions on the team, Racy, where you have to be a part of the run and pass game.
Right.
You know, that's not going to go on his plate. Someday, no, I mean, I think that's a good point and a good question. We certainly have seen that with some guys. I mean, Devin Funchess is a successful – well, actually, he went the other way.
Yeah.
Devin Funchess went the other way. But, yeah, we've seen this.
Packers legend right now.
From time to time.
Devin Funchess.
That's right. I can't believe we haven't been talking about the Packers yet.
We're going to get to it.
Glorious press conference of all time. But, no, I mean, I think down the road, yeah, I mean, I think that is a possibility. But here's how, again, he runs like a 6'1", 180-pound guy. I mean, it's something to behold.
Ron texting in, Joe, was there anybody to you that looked like they were not in football shape? And remember, we talked about that last year this time around in training camp. There was one person in particular didn't look like they were in football shape with Isaiah Wilson.
Well, my quick answer is no. I follow that up with saying, look, I didn't – you know, in practices like this, it's so much about the skill guys. I mean, yeah, you're watching pass pro. David Questenberry is at left tackle with the ones yesterday because Sombrilo was out. Lawan, you know, didn't really do team stuff.
Right.
So you saw, like, you know, Harold Landry victimized him a little bit. There was no one who stood out. But let me also follow up with this. First day of camp last year, obviously a lot of focus on Isaiah Wilson. I didn't sit there and say, oh, my God, he's in terrible shape. I actually was like, wow, like, good feat. Obviously, he wasn't in great shape, but he wasn't like in like horrific shape or something where everybody's just like, whoa. It was just, you know, we know what happened over time. So to answer your question, no, big guys are supposed to be big. I didn't see anybody who looked out of place. And I mean, it's, you know, it happens here or there, but it's hard to be in this league. Most people get that.
JC in Goodlettsville texting in, did Farley go against Brown or Julio Jones in drills, and how did that look? Sorry if discussed already.
Matias Farley?
Yes.
Wow, I threw him out as a don't totally discount Matias Farley. Yeah.
Caleb Farley not participating in drills.
Oh, he's talking about Caleb. I'm sorry.
Farley. Yeah. I thought you were joking.
No.
No.
That's weird because how do you
– I mean, I assume he's talking about Caleb Farley.
Yeah. No, listen. Here's the thing on Caleb Farley. Caleb Farley is on the NFI.
Right.
So Caleb Farley is – whatever he's doing at practice right now, it is off the record.
Right.
Okay? So – No, he's not doing any drills against anyone. I'm just saying, just a feeling I have that he may be out there, you know, at some point during camp, which would, of course, be great news for the Titans. It's just a question of, you know, at what point do you say, okay,
right,
here's contact. Let's see what that looks like. That is wild, though, that there's two Farleys, and I didn't even think about that. So Matias Farley.
Maybe he is talking about Matias Farley. I just assume Caleb.
But, hey, I'm going to tell you, this team could have two Farleys. I mean, Matias Farley did not make my 53, which, of course, is, you know, basically gospel. But he's a pretty good depth piece there who gives you some good looks at the very least in that safety rotation.
We come back, we will continue the conversation on Titans training camp with David Beauclair from SI.com. We'll get to that coming up next. This is Robbie and Rex Road, live from the Wholesaling Studios, powered by RumbleOn.com. You're on ESPN 102.5 The Game.
What defines Ohio? A place that dares to go first and never looks back. There's no slowing us down. In Ohio, we're powering America. Discovering breakthroughs, driving the future, propelling tomorrow. At Jobs Ohio, our mission is clear. Strengthen job opportunities and empower Ohio's workforce. Ohio, our time is now. See Ohio's momentum at jobsohio.com/ohio's time.